unharmed. The dog has been taken into custody by the West Long Branch chapter of the SPCA, which is awaiting relatives to come and claim it. I wonder what kind of dog it was, Kay said as Reuben came back into the living room. Ellen made a face. I'm going to finish my makeup. Can you just find out for me if it's going to rain? The weather should be on soon. Sure, Kay said, sprawling on the couch. On the television, the same announcer came back on with another warning about the animal, reporting that there were several unconfirmed reports about missing infants and children. In some of the more unlikely reports, children were stolen from their beds, out of strollers, off swings and playgrounds. No one had seen anything, however, let alone a bear. A Popcorn Park Zoo representative was speaking at a press conference. The white-haired man was polishing his glasses methodically, nearly in tears as he explained how it was difficult to tell what animal had escaped, since this morning all the animals had been found in the wrong cages. The tigers had eaten several of the llamas before they could be separated. The deer had been in a small bird enclosure, panicking in the enclosed space. He suspected PETA. He didn't understand how this could have happened in such a well-run, tidy zoo. In other news, a young girl on her way back from classes at Monmouth University was kidnapped this morning by an unidentified assailant. She was released tonight after a harrowing day in which she was forced to answer riddles to avoid torture. She is currently being held at Monmouth Medical Center and is in stable condition. Kay sat bolt upright. Riddles? This is your doing, Reuben said, looking at Kay across the dim living room. What do you think of the first day of the next 7 years? Kay shook her head, not understanding. The screen showed men and women being strapped to stretchers in Thompson Park. They had been found naked, dancing in a circle, and had to be forcibly restrained by police to make them stop. Their clothes were found nearby, and the available identification showed no common link. They were being treated for dehydration and blistered feet. Behind the cameras, Kay could easily see the fat toadstools growing in a thick circle. Kay rubbed a hand over her face. But why? I don't understand. Reuben spoke as he began to pace the room. Everything is always easier when considered black and white, isn't it? Your friends are, after all, good and wise, so all solitary fae must be good and wise. Your friends have some respect and fear and knowledge of humans, so all the solitary fae will follow in that example. The phone rang, startling her. She got up and answered it. Hello? It was Janet. She sounded subdued. Hi, Kay. Hi. Janet was the last person she expected to call. I was wondering if you wanted to hang out. What? Kay said. No, seriously. All of us guys are going to a rave tonight. You want to come? Have you seen the news? No, why? Kay fumbled for an explanation. There's supposed to be a bear on the loose. We're going to the pier. Don't be weird. So are you coming? No one should go. Janet, it really isn't safe. So don't go, Janet said. By the way, have you seen my brother? Kay's insides suddenly turned to ice. Corny's gone? Yeah, Janet answered. Since yesterday. Kay couldn't help wincing. Corny was under the damn hill. She knew it. She looked desperately at Reuben, but he regarded her blankly. He couldn't hear Janet. He'd never even met Corny. I'll see you, okay? Sure, whatever, bye. She hung up. Who was that? Reuben asked. Janet's brother is still under the hill, with Nephemail. Nephemail's name made Reuben stop in his place. More secrets? She winced. Corny, he was with me that night, when I was a pixie. You are a pixie. He was there that night, the one when you didn't know it was me, and when I left, he... met Nephemail. Reuben's eyebrows shot up at that. Corny was totally out of his head. Nephomail hurt him and he liked it. He wanted to go back. You left a friend, a mortal, under the hill, alone? He sounded incredulous. Are you completely heartless? You saw what you were leaving him to. You made me leave. I couldn't get back in. I tried. I thought we were going to be honest with one another. What manner of honesty is this? She felt completely miserable. Do you know who Nephomail is? She shook her head, dread creeping over limbs, making her feel heavy, making her want to sink to the floor. He's the one that put the enchantment on me and who took it off. He was once the best knight in the Unseelie court. That is, before he was sent to the Seelie court as part of the price for a truce. He was sent there, and I was sent to Nyknevin. Kay just stood, stunned, thinking about the conversation she had overheard between Nyknevin and Nephomail. Why hadn't she deduced that? What other meaning could there have been? So Nephomail still serves Nyknevin? Perhaps. It seems more likely that he serves only himself. Kay, do you know who concocted the plan to sabotage the tithe? You think it was Nephomail? I don't know. Tell me, how did your friends become aware you were a pixie when not even the queen of the Unseelie court could see through your glamour? The Thistle Witch said she remembered when I got switched. Now, how is it that they know Nephomail?
I don't know.
We lack some piece of information, Kay. Why would Nephomail want to make trouble for Nyknevin? Perhaps he sought revenge for being sent away. I doubt he found the Seelie court to his taste.
She shook her head. I don't know. I have to get Corny.
Kay, if what you say is true, you know that he may well no longer be alive.
She took a sharp, shallow breath.
He's fine, she said.
12. And for those masks who linger on to feast at night upon the pure sea, Arthur Rimbaud, does she dance? She'd only ever brought one other person to the glass swamp. The summer when she was 9 and Janet had taken to constantly teasing her about her imaginary friends, Kay had decided that she was going to prove they were real once and for all. Janet had stepped on a half-moon of bottle glass, cutting through her sneaker and jabbing into her foot on the way to the swamp. They'd never even made it down the ridge. It had not occurred to her until now to suspect that Luti or Spike or even poor, dead Gristle had something to do with that. Darting lights were easily visible from the street, and shouts carried through the still air. She couldn't hear the voices well enough to discern whether they were about to stumble down into a bunch of kids drinking beer or into something else. Reuben was all in black, jeans and t-shirt and long coat that all must have been conjured up from moonbeams and cobwebs, because she was sure they didn't come from any of the closets in her grandmother's house. He had pulled the top part of his hair back, but the shock of white somehow made him seem even more inhuman when he was dressed in modern clothes. She wondered if she looked inhuman, too. Was there something about her that warned people off? Kay had always assumed that she was just weird, no more explanation necessary. Looking at him, she wondered. He glanced toward her without turning his head and raised his eyebrows in a silent query.
Just looking at you, she said.
Looking at me?
I was wondering how you did that, the clothes.
Oh. He looked down, as though he'd only then given a thought to what he was wearing.
It's glamour.
So what are you really wearing?
The words left her mouth before she could consider them. She winced. He didn't seem to mind. In fact, he flashed her one of his brief smiles.
And if I said nothing at all?
Then I would point out that sometimes, if you look at something out of the corner of your eye, you can see right through glamour, she returned.
That brought surprised laughter.
What a relief to us both, then,
that I am actually wearing exactly what you saw me in this afternoon. Although one might point out that in that outfit, your last concern should be my modesty. You don't like it? She looked down at the purple vinyl cat suit. There had been no reason for her not to put it on immediately. After all, it was still Halloween. Now, that's the sort of question I begin to expect from you, one to which there is no good answer. Kay grinned, and she could tell that the grin was likely to stay on her face for a long time. They could do this. They could figure this out. Everything was going to be fine. Down here? He asked, and she nodded. Indiscreet, was all he said before he hooked his boots in the muddy ledge and carefully walked down the ridge. Kay followed him, stumbling along at more or less her own pace. Green women and men were half immersed in the deeper parts of the stream, androgynous forms rough with bark and shimmery lights. A few of the creatures saw Reuben and slithered into the pool or back up the bank. There was some whispering.
"Kay?"
a voice rasped, and she spun around. It was the Thistle Witch, sitting on a log. She patted the place beside her.
"Things did not go well under the hill."
"No," Kay said, sitting down. She wanted to put more anger in her voice, but she couldn't. "I almost died."
"Nick Nevin's knight saved you, did he not?"
Kay nodded, looking up to see him, half in shadows, his hands in the pockets of his coat, glowering impressively. It made her want to grin at him, although she was afraid he might grin back and ruin his furious demeanor.
"Why have you brought him among us?"
"If it wasn't for him, I'd be dead." The Thistle Witch looked in the direction of the knight and then back at Kay.
"Do you know of the things he has done?"
"Don't you understand? She made him do them." "I have no desire to be welcome among you, old mother," Reuben said, kneeling down on one knee in the soft earth. "I only wanted to know whether you were aware of the price of your freedom. There are trolls and worse that are delighted to be without any master but their own desires."
"And if there are, what of it?" Spike asked, coming up behind them. "Let the mortals suffer as we have suffered."
Kay was astonished. She thought back to Luti's disdain for mortal girls. They were only her friends because of what she was, and not for any better reason than that. Her fingers brushed over the purple plastic covering her legs, letting her nails cut little lines in the vinyl. She had wanted them to be better than people, but they weren't, and she didn't know what they were anymore. She'd been flung back and forth through too many emotions over the past few days. She was hungover from adrenaline. She was worried about Corny and worried about Janet. "So, it's us against them now? I'm not talking about the Unseelie court here. Since when are mortals the enemies of the solitary Fae?" Kay said, anger bleeding into her voice, making it rough. She looked at Reuben again, drawing confidence from his proximity, and that worried her too. How had he gone from being someone she half despised to being the one person she was relying on in the space of mere hours? Reuben's hand touched her shoulder lightly, a comforting gesture. It amused her how wide Spike's eyes got. She wondered exactly what Spike imagined had passed between them.
"You think like a mortal," Spike said.
"Well, gosh, I did spend every week of my life except the last thinking I was one." Spike's thick brows furrowed, and he tilted his head to the side, black eyes glittering.
"You don't know anything about fairy. You don't know where your loyalties should be."
"If I don't understand, it's because you didn't tell me. You kept me in the dark, and you used me."
"You agreed to help us. You saw the importance of what we were doing."
"We have to tell the solitary Fae that Nick Nevin was innocent of the sacrifice. This has to stop, Spike."
"I won't go back to being a slave. Not for any mortal, not for anything."
"But the Unseelie Queen is dead."
It doesn't matter. There's always another, worse than the last. Don't you dare try to undo this. Don't you dare go around telling tales.
Or you'll what? Reuben said softly.
It's not her place, Spike protested, twisting the long hairs of one eyebrow nervously between his fingers. The tithe was not completed. The reason matters little. The result is the same. For 7 years, the solitary Fae and Nick Nevin's lands are free.
Unless they enter into a new compact.
Why would they do that? Spike demanded. Rumor has it that the Sealy Queen is coming down from the north, bringing practically the whole court, from what I hear.
Reuben froze at that. Why is she coming? He breathed. Spike shrugged.
Probably to see what she can claim before the Unseely Court gets on its feet again. Bad time to be making deals with anyone.
Do you think Nephemail will bring Corny to the Seely Court? Kay asked Reuben. He nodded once. He'll have to, if he intends to keep him. The assumption that if Nephemail didn't intend to keep Corny, he was already dead, went unspoken. Do you know where they're going to camp? Kay asked Spike.
It's an orchard, Spike said. A place where people pick their own apples. They should be there by tomorrow's dawn.
Kay knew where that was. She'd gone there on a school trip and a couple of times with her grandmother. Delicious orchards.
Wait, I want to come with you,
Lutie said, flying to Kay's shoulder. Kay felt a sharp tug on her hair as Lutie caught a strand.
Sorry,
the little fairy said contritely. Reuben, this is Lutie Lou. Lutie Lou, Reuben. Kay loved it when he grinned. She really did. It is my distinct pleasure to make your acquaintance, Reuben said, touching the tiny hand with two fingers. Kay walked down the boardwalk, as she had done not even a week before. Tonight, the moon was on the wane, distorted-looking, and the brine off the sea clung to her skin and hair in a fine mist. The tiny specks of silver glittered in the stretchy purple vinyl of Liz's catsuit as she moved. Helplessness in the face of not knowing where Corny was had made her restless. She wanted to go everywhere, anywhere Nephemail might have taken him, but she didn't know where any of those places might be. Finally, she decided to go to the rave after all. Kay was worried about Corny, worried about Janet, so worried that she needed to do something, no matter whether it needed doing. The pounding of music inside the abandoned building was loud enough that she could feel the bass beating through the wooden slats of the boardwalk. Once called Galaxia, the club sat half on the street and half on what remained of the pier. Several years ago, part of the pier had burned down, wrecking game booths, a water slide, and a haunted house. The remaining blackened shell was used only to set off the city's annual fireworks. Galaxia had once been a typical Jersey Shore bar and dance club. The airbrushed sign still hung over the doorway, although it was grayed and the edges were abraded from wind-tossed sand. Tonight she could see glow sticks and bright clothes pulsing with each flash of a strobe light through the window. Kay wasn't sure if the place had been rented or just broken into. A large crowd was gathered around the door, some costumed for Halloween in masks and face paint, others wearing their normal baggy jeans and t-shirts. A girl with her hair in hundreds of bright braids bounced in place, a teddy bear tethered to her belt loop with a fluorescent yellow cord. Before they got too close, Reuben picked up two leaves from the gutter. In his hands they became crisp bills that he folded quickly into the pockets of his coat. Lutie peeked her head out and ducked back down. I have to work on this glamour thing, don't I? Kay said, but he only smiled. At the entrance, a girl with a blue beehive wig, blue lipstick, and a blue lip ring made change for him. Nice outfit, the girl said to Kay, her gaze flicking enviously over the catsuit. Kay smiled her thanks, and then they were inside. Bodies were pressed against one another, undulating like a great wave. Dancers having room only to hop in place. A clown was dancing on the bar, his makeup done with neon paint that glowed under the black light. Two girls dressed as cats, both in white leotards with pin-on tails, danced beside him. The music was so loud that Kay didn't even try to talk to Reuben. She just slipped her hand inside his and pulled him along through the crowd. He let her lead him toward the back where double doors opened onto the blackened boardwalk that was being used as an impromptu dance floor for those that couldn't fit inside the club. It was as packed as inside, bodies jammed together so that even those that were sitting along the walls were touching. "See anything?" she yelled. He shook his head. Two ends of a horse shouldered by them, holding water bottles. She thought she saw a doughboy in the crowd, not dressed as anything, but she wasn't sure.
"Kay!"
Reuben yelled into her ear.
"There! Look!"
She followed the quick flick of his hand with her gaze, but she didn't see anything. She shrugged, knowing that would be easier to understand than speech.
"Look for your friends!" he yelled.
She nodded as he set off in the direction of a tall woman with thick lips and maroon hair. The woman stopped dancing and began shouting at him, arms waving wildly when he got close. Then the woman turned as if to run, and he grabbed her arm. Kay left them still arguing and waded through the crowd. If there was just the one fairy and Reuben had already found her, then maybe there was nothing to be nervous about here. In the crush of bouncing dancers, it seemed impossible that there would be anything dangerous and unworldly. Kay found herself relaxing. Kenny was on the pier dancing with Fatima and Janet. Fatima had on three different layers of long skirts and a scarf over her head with big hoops in her ears, looking like a gypsy or a pirate. Janet was wearing all black with whiskers drawn on her face and eyeliner. The whiskers reminded Kay more of a mouse than a cat. Kay took a deep breath.
"Hey!"
Fatima raised her eyebrows, and Kenny stared at her as though she didn't have the glamour on at all.
"Hi,"
Janet said. Not for the first time, Kay wondered why Janet had invited her. Was it to teach Kenny a lesson? From the way he'd paled when she came up to them, Kay decided that it was probably working. Kay bounced with the music. There was little room to wave her arms unless they were directly above her head.
"Getting some water,"
Kenny shouted. He walked off toward the inside of the building.
"I'll be right back,"
Kay said to Janet, who tried to say something to her as she turned to follow Kenny. She found him waiting in line for the men's bathroom.
"I'm sorry."
His eyes narrowed. He didn't answer. She took a breath. Her mind was spinning from all the worry, and she found that she had nothing to say to him and nothing she needed to hear from him. It was enough that she knew he was all right, eyes clear and free of any enchantment.
"See you back over there,"
Kay said, feeling foolish at having trailed him all the way across the club for nothing. She began to dance her way back to Janet and Fatima. Then the music changed. It was still the spacey, disjointed sound of trance music, but there were unusual instruments in the background, strange, reedy sounds and whispers.
"Dance."
Kay's body complied unthinkingly, spinning her into the thick crush of bodies. Everyone was dancing. People bobbed against one another, arms waving in the air, heads nodding with the music. No one sat against the wall. No one stood in line or smoked a cigarette along the water's edge. Everyone danced, sweaty bodies packed tight, drunk with sound. At first, it was a gentle compulsion, slipping into Kay's mind easily. Then she began to notice the Fae. A freckle-faced fairy with flame-red hair that rose up into a Dr. Seuss curl was the first one that she saw. He was dancing like the others, but when he saw her stare, he winked. Looking quickly around, she noticed more, winged sprites with tiny silver hoops piercing the points of their ears, goblins the size of dogs drinking bottled water off the top of the bar, a green-skinned pixie boy with a blue glow stick lighting up the inside of his mouth, and other fae, dim shadows at the edges of the club, flashes of glittering scales, luring dancers into the empty bathrooms and out onto the pier. Beside Janet danced a disturbingly familiar dark-skinned boy. Kay pushed brutally through the crowd, knocking people aside with her elbows just in time to see Janet smile up at the Kelpie and let him lead her off the edge of the pier.
"Janet!"
Kay screamed, pushing her way to the water. But when she got there, there were only ribbons of red curls sinking below the waves. She stared for a moment, until desperation rose up in her and she jumped. Bone-cold black water closed over her head. Her muscles clenched with shock as she went under once and then bobbed up, teeth chattering, spitting out briny water. Her flailing hands caught strands of hair and she pulled, cruelly, desperately. Her legs kicked automatically, treading water. Her hand came up empty, save for a clump of tangled red hair.
"Janet!"
she cried as a wave broke almost on top of her, pushing her into the pilings beneath the pier. Taking a deep breath, she dove down, opening her eyes as she went, desperately hoping for a single flash of red hair, casting her hands like claws. She bobbed up from the water again, out of breath and coughing. It had been too dark to see anything, and the reach of her arms had found nothing.
"Janet!"
Kay screamed, one hand slapping the top of the water, sending a spray of it showering down around her. She was treading water violently, raging at Janet, at herself, and especially at the frigid, black, unfeeling sea that swallowed Janet up. Then, rising above the waves like a magnificent statue, there was the Kelpie itself, nostrils flaring and clouds of hot breath rising from them.
"Where is Janet?"
Kay shouted.
"Oh, no. Now you are in my element. No demands."
"A deal, then. Please, just let her go."
It was hard to speak through chattering teeth. Her body was slowly adjusting, numbing to the temperature of the ocean. Kay looked into the softly glowing eyes, their whiteness reflecting in the black sea like distant moons.
"Please!"
"No need for deals and bargains. I am done. You may have the rest of it if you like."
A body bobbed to the surface beside the black horse, red hair tangled with seaweed, face down, arms floating beneath the surface. Kay swam to her and tipped back her head, pushing aside hair to see the sightless eyes, smears of drawn whiskers still staining her cheeks, blue lips and open mouth, full to the teeth with water.
"She thrashed beautifully," the Kelpie said.
"No, no, no, no."
Kay hugged the body to her, trying desperately to tip up the head. Water spilled out of Janet's mouth as though it were a decanter.
"Why so sad? She was only going to die anyway."
"Not tonight!"
Kay yelled, swallowing most of a wave she tried to bob above.
"She wouldn't have died tonight."
"One day is much like another."
"Tell that to Nick Nevin. Someday you're going to know how Janet felt. Everything dies, Kelpie, and that includes me and you, fairies or not."
The Kelpie looked strangely subdued. It let out a huff of warm air. Then it sank down, leaving her alone in the sea, treading water, holding Janet's body. Another swell came, pushing Janet's body toward the beach. Kay took one of Janet's hands, no more chill than her own, but frighteningly pliant, and scissored her legs toward the shore. As she swam closer, the waves grew larger and more violent, breaking over her. Janet's body was pulled from her grip and tossed up on the beach. She saw Reuben running toward the edge of the waves. He bent to look at Janet while Kay struggled to her feet in the shallow water, the pull of receding waves still strong enough to nearly knock her off her feet. She coughed and spat out a mixture of saliva and sand.
"Do you seek out peril? One would think that years of being immortal would have made you more aware of mortality,"
he was shouting. And that had too much of the echo of her previous conversation in it. He opened his coat and closed it around her, heedless of the wet clothes that dampened his own. Sirens wailed, and she could see flashing lights.
No!
His hand cupped the back of her head before she could turn.
Don't look. We have to go.
Kay pulled away.
I need to see her. To say goodbye.
10 steps across the wet sand and she dropped to her knees beside the body, ignoring the edges of waves that sucked at the sand around her knees. Janet had washed up like a piece of rubbish, and her limbs were thrown at odd angles. Kay smoothed them out so that Janet was lying on her back, arms at her side. Kay stroked back red hair, touching Janet's cold face with cold fingers. And in that moment, it seemed that the whole world had gone cold, and that she would never be warm again.
13. For I have sworn thee fair, and thought thee bright, who art as black as hell, as dark as night. William Shakespeare, Sonnet 147. Kay woke on the mattress in her bedroom, tangled in the covers, wearing only her underpants and the t-shirt that Reuben had borrowed the day before. Her head was pillowed on his bare chest, and for a moment she could not remember why her hair was stiff and her eyelashes were crusted together with a thin layer of salt. When she did remember, she pulled herself out of bed with a groan. Janet was dead, drowned, lungs filled with water. Dead. The word echoed in her head as though its repetition held some clue to its reversal. Vague memories of the night before, of Reuben bringing her home, of him enchanting her grandmother to stop yelling as he led Kay up the stairs. She'd screamed at him for doing that, screamed and cried and finally fell asleep. Kay padded to the mirror. She looked haggard. Her head felt heavy from crying, and her eyes were swollen with sleep. There were dark smudges the color of bruises under her eyes, and even her lips looked pale and chapped. She licked them. They tasted like salt. Janet was dead. All Kay's fault. If only she hadn't followed Kenny. If only she hadn't made Janet jealous. She might never have gone off with the Kelpie in the first place. If only. And Corny was still gone. Closing her eyes, she tore the glamour she was wearing and let it disperse into the air. What she saw was worse. Her hair was still stiff with salt, her lips were still chapped, and, if anything, the severe fairy features exaggerated how tired she looked. In the mirror, she saw the reflection of the shirt she was wearing and blearily remembered being stripped down a few blocks from the boardwalk when no amount of huddling under Reuben's coat could make her teeth stop chattering. The catsuit apparently hadn't been enough, like a second skin, trapping water inside it. He'd helped her out of the outfit and then wrapped her in both his shirt and his coat. Summoning magic to her fingers, she tried to lessen the darkness around her eyes and to shift her hair into magazine-smooth locks. It was easy, and a small, amazed smile tugged at the corner of her mouth when she applied eyeliner with a pass of her nail and dabbed her eyes to be a bright blue. She touched them again and they became a deep violet. Looking down, she glamored herself to be dressed in a ball gown and it appeared, ruby silk and puffy crinolines, the whole thing encrusted with gemstones. It looked oddly familiar, and then she realized where the image had come from. It was an illustration from The Frog Prince in an old storybook she had. Then, with a pass of her hand, she was wearing an emerald Renaissance frock coat over green fishnet stockings, a modified version of the prince in the same story. Reuben shifted on the mattress, blinking up at her. He was unglamored, his hair bright as a dime where the light hit it. Lutie was lying on the same pillow, wrapped in a silver tress as if it were a coverlet. "I can't go downstairs," Kay said. She couldn't face her grandmother, not after last night, and Kay very much doubted that her mother had come home yet. Kay's memories of the last time she'd gone to the New York Halloween parade were a mass of feathers and glitter and men on stilts. That time, Ellen had drunk so much $3 champagne that she'd completely forgotten how to get where they were staying,
and they had wound up sleeping the night in the subway.
"We could go out the window,"
Reuben said easily, and she wondered whether he was teasing her or whether he really had accepted her odd stricture so easily. She couldn't remember much of what she'd said the night before. Maybe it had been so awful and irrational that more of the same didn't surprise him.
"How are we going to get to the orchard? It's in Colt's Neck."
He ran fingers through his hair, hand-combing it, and then turned toward Luti.
"You tied knots in my hair."
Luti giggled in a way that sounded a little like panic. Sighing, he looked back at Kay.
"There are ways," he said, "but you would mislike most of them."
Somehow, she didn't doubt that.
"Let's take Corny's car," she said.
Reuben raised both eyebrows.
"I know where it is, and I know where his keys are."
Reuben got up off the mattress and sat on the box spring as though it was the couch she had once hoped to make it into.
"Cars are made entirely of steel, in case you'd forgotten."
Kay stood a moment and began rummaging through the drifts of black garbage bags. After a little searching, she held up a pair of orange mittens triumphantly, ignoring his look of disbelief.
"There's steel in my boots," she said, pushing her feet into them as she spoke. "But the leather keeps it from touching me. I can barely feel it."
"Would you like a cigarette to go with that?" Reuben asked dryly.
"I think I liked you better before you acquired a sense of humor."
His voice was guarded.
"And I thought you liked me not at all."
Kay brushed back her now silky hair and rubbed her temples. She should say something, do something. But she was sure that if she stopped to sort out the swirling thoughts in her head, she would fall apart. Was this about the night before? She could barely remember what she had yelled at him now. It was all a blur of grief and rage. But everything was different between them this morning, and she didn't know how to make it right again. She reached her hand out, touching him lightly just below his collarbone, opening her mouth to speak, then closing it again. She shook her head slightly, hoping that somehow he'd understand that she was sorry, that she was grateful, that she liked him too much. She shook her head again, harder, stepping back.
"Corny first, all other things afterward."
They went out the window, Reuben climbing down the tree easily, Luti flying, and Kay managing an ungainly cross between jumping and gliding. She stumbled when she landed.
"Flying!" Luti said.
Kay glared at her and put on the mittens.
Looking down, she realized she was still glamored in the frock coat.
Reuben was wearing all black, head to foot, and mostly leather. Luti's wings shimmered iridescent rainbows over them both as she looped in the air like a demented dragonfly.
"This way,"
Kay directed them to the trailer park. The door to the car was locked, and Kay didn't hesitate before she pounded one mittened hand against the glass. It spiderwebbed, and she battered at it again and again until her knuckles were bleeding.
"Stop it," Reuben said,
catching her hand when she drew back for another punch. She stopped, dazed, looking at the window. He took a knife from inside a boot. Had it always been there, or had he conjured it into existence?
"Use the handle," he said.
His voice sounded very tired.
"Or use a rock."
She managed to hack open the glass well enough to stick her hand inside and force up the lock. Looking around at the trailer park, she was amazed that no one had even come out to object to her breaking into a car in broad daylight. Replacing the mitten, she opened the door and got in, wincing as she took a breath of the stale, metallic air. She leaned over and popped the lock on the other side and winched down her window before getting the key down from where it was tucked in the sun visor. Reuben got in the passenger side warily, and Luti flew in with him, wrinkling her nose at Kay as she flittered around the back seat and then finally perched on the dusty dashboard. Kay put the key in the ignition and turned it, feeling the heat of the iron even through her gloves. It didn't feel unpleasant, not exactly, but there was a buzzing in her head that she knew would get worse. Kay pushed down on the gas pedal. The engine wheezed, but the car did not move. Cursing under her breath, she slapped the parking brake down, threw the knob to drive, and pushed on the gas pedal. The car roared forward so fast that she had to slam on the brake to stop. Luti tumbled into Kay's lap. Reuben looked over from where he was braced against the dash.
"How many times have you driven?"
"Never," Kay growled.
"Never?
I'm not old enough yet." She giggled at that, but it came out a little high-pitched, almost hysterical. She put her foot on the gas more gently, and the car responded better. Turning the wheel, she began to steer toward the street. Luti gave a tiny squeal and clawed her way up Kay's frock coat. The smell of iron was overwhelming. Kay took the ramp onto the highway, relieved that there would be no more turns, no more merging and stop signs. All she had to do was stay in one lane until they were nearly there. She reminded herself that they had to get there before anything else happened to Corny. She pushed her foot down harder on the gas pedal, willing the car to stay in the middle of the lane as she sped down the highway. Kay could feel her vision grow hazy as the iron made her head spin. Even the drafts of air blowing through the window were not enough. She shook her head, trying to throw off the feeling of weight that seemed to settle like a band across the temples of her skull.
"Kay!"
Luti squeaked, just in time for Kay to swerve violently to the right and clear of the car she had almost drifted into. The car hit the edge of the grass on the right side of the highway with one wheel before she got it back under control. Luti's yelp was like the chirp of a sparrow. Reuben had made no sound at all, but she didn't want to take her eyes off the road long enough to see the expression on his face. Finally, their exit was next, and Kay turned onto the off-ramp, navigating the turn at a dangerous speed. She kept the car on the shoulder of the road since she couldn't find a way to gracefully merge into the regular lanes. It was only two traffic lights, and then she was able to pull into the orchard and park the car, one side hanging far over the yellow line in the parking space. She turned the key off with a sigh. Reuben was out of the car nearly before it was fully stopped. Luti clung to Kay's coat, still trembling.
"Corny can drive back," Kay said in a small voice.
"I have a new enthusiasm for our quest."
Reuben's voice trembled slightly, despite his attempt at callousness. The orchard was acres and acres of fruit trees and had a farmer's market-type store that sold jam and milk and cinnamon cider that she remembered from her school trip. Today there were piles of pumpkins and gourds, marked down to dirt cheap, some of them looking bruised. The parking lot was full of minivans spilling out children, their mothers chasing and herding them. Kay followed Reuben as he wove through the crowd and around a massive monument of hay and pumpkins. One of the mothers pulled her child abruptly to one side, out of their path. Kay immediately checked her glamour, holding up a hand for inspection and turning it in the light to make sure it was still pink all over. Then she glanced at Reuben and realized that they looked freaky enough for that to be a normal mom reaction. She could feel the air change as they stepped into the grove of trees, and the sound of car engines and laughter faded away. She could no longer smell iron, and she took a deep breath, exhaling every exhaust fume. Like when she had stepped into the hill, she felt the odd fission that she was growing to associate with stepping over into Fairy. White horses grazed in the meadow, the silver bells on their collars tinkling when they raised their heads. Knotted apple trees still hung heavy with a late fall harvest of fruit. The air was warm and sweet with the promise of spring and new growth. Denizens of the Seely Court were spread over the field, silken blankets spread out with folk sitting or lying on them. As Kay walked among them, she could smell fresh lavender and heather. The folk were as varied as in the Unseely Court, although they were dressed in brighter colors. They passed a fox-faced man in a tatter coat of many fabrics, trailing ribbons. Another fae wore a golden sheath dress, bright as the sun. She whispered in the ear of a boy wearing a dress as well, his all in robin's egg blue. A group of fairies were crouched over what looked like a game, one tossing shining stones into the center of a circle cut into the earth. She could not see what the object was, but but the group would either sigh or cheer, depending, she guessed, on some pattern of how the stones fell. Nearby, at the edges of the gathering, a tree woman with skin like bark and fingers that turned to leaves at the nails was whispering to a mute apple tree, every so often turning her head slowly to glare at seven little men who were standing on each other's shoulders. They formed a fairy ladder that wove back and forth from base to top, where one little man was grasping desperately for a fat apple. A winged girl ran by with a very little boy toddling after her, his hair braided with flowers. A human boy. Kay shuddered. Looking around again, she noticed more human children, none older than perhaps six. They were being brushed and petted, their eyes half-lidded and dreamy. One sat with a blue-skinned woman, head on the fairy's knees. A group of three children, all crowned with daisies, clumsily danced with three little men in mushroom caps. Fairy ladies and gentlemen clapped. Kay sped up her pace, meaning to stop Reuben and ask him about the children, but then she saw where he was looking, and she forgot all her questions. Next to trees, thick with spring blossoms, even in fall, there was an auburn-haired fairy dressed in a deep emerald green coat that flared like a gown. Kay stopped walking when she saw the woman. She could scarcely remember to breathe. She was the most beautiful thing Kay had ever seen. Her skin was flawless. Her hair shone bright as copper in the sun under a woven circlet of ivy and dogwood blossoms. Her eyes were as bright as the green apples that hung near them. Kay could not just glance at the fairy woman. Her eyes were drawn to look until the fairy took up the totality of her vision, rendering all else dull and faded. Reuben did not need to tell her that this was the queen of the Seelie court. Her women wore dresses in light fabrics of storm grays and morning roses. As they approached, one of the women inhaled so sharply it was almost a scream and covered her mouth with her hand. Reuben turned his head to regard her, and he smiled. Kay tensed. The smile seemed to sit incongruously on his lips, more like a twitch of the mouth than any expression of pleasure. A knight suddenly interposed himself between them and the queen. He was dressed in jointed green armor, and his hair was as the fine, pale gold of corn silk. He held an interesting spear, so ornate with decoration that Kay wondered if it could be used. "Talithane," Reuben said, inclining his head for a brief nod. "You are unwelcome here," the knight said. Luti clambered out of Kay's hip pocket and peered at the new knight with unfeigned fascination. "Announce me to the queen," Reuben said. "If she does not wish to see me, then I will quit the grove immediately." Kay started to object, but Reuben laid a hand on her arm. "My companions will, of course, be free to stay or go as they please," he continued. Talithane's glance flickered to the queen and then back to Reuben with something like jealousy writ in his expression. A motion of his gauntleted hand signaled several additional knights. A page came, listened to Talithane, then darted off to speak with the queen. After bending gracefully to listen to the little page, the queen stepped away from her ladies and across the grass, toward them. She did not look at Kay. Her eyes rested only on Reuben. Kay could see Reuben's face change as he looked at his lady. There was a longing there that overwhelmed Kay. It was the steady look of a dog gone feral, but still hoping for the kind touch of his master's hand. She thought of the tapestry on his wall and all the things he had said and had not said, and she knew then why he'd drawn back from her kisses. He must have cherished this love all that time, hoping for a chance to see his queen again. Kay had been blind, too full of her own wishful thinking to see what should have been apparent. Kay was grateful when Reuben knelt, so that she too could go to one knee and shield the pain on her face beneath a bowed head.
So formal, my knight, the queen said.
Kay stole a glance upward at the queen's eyes. They were soft and wet and green as jewels. Kay sighed. She felt very tired suddenly, and very plain. Kay wished Reuben would just ask about Corny so she could go home.
"Yours no longer," he said as though he regretted it.
"If not mine, then whose?"
The conversation had too many undertones for Kay to be sure that she was following it. Had they been lovers?
"No one's, Salerial," he said deferentially, a small smile on his face and wonder in his eyes.
He spoke as one who was afraid to speak too loudly, lest some fragile thing, too dear to pay for, shatter.
"Perhaps my own."
Her smile did not fade, did not change. It was a perfect smile, perfect curve of lips, perfect balance between joy and affection. It was so perfect that Kay couldn't help getting lost in it, losing the thread of the conversation so that she was baffled when the queen spoke again.
"And why do you come among us, then, if not to come home?"
"I seek Nephemael. There is a young man with him that my companion would restore to Ironside."
Salerial shook her head.
"He is not among my people any longer. When the Unseelie Queen died, and the solitary Fae went free..."
Here she paused, looking at Reuben. Something about her face was unsettled.
"He seized her throne, and has set himself up as king upon it."
Kay's neck snapped up. Wide-eyed, without thinking, she spoke.
"Nephemael's the king of the Unseelie Court?"
She bit her lip, but the queen turned her gaze on her indulgently.
"Who have you brought to us?"
"Her name is Kay. She is a changeling."
He looked distracted. The queen's auburn eyebrows rose.
"You are aiding her in the recovery of the mortal boy Nephemael has spirited off?"
"I am," Reuben said.
"And what is the price of your service, Reuben, who belongs only to himself?"
Her hand came up and idly toyed with an amulet around her neck. Kay could not bear to look at the perfection of her face. Instead, she looked at the queen's necklace. The stone was milky pale and strung on a long chain. It seemed very familiar. A rosy stain tinted Reuben's cheeks. Could he really be blushing?
"There is no price."
Kay did remember that necklace.
Nephemael had worn one just like it. He had had it around his neck the night he'd come to take her for the tithe.
The queen leaned forward, almost conspiratorially, as though Kay was long forgotten.
"Once you told me that you would do anything to prove your love for me. Would you still?"
His blush grew deeper, if anything, but when he spoke, his voice was steely.
"I would not."
What did that mean? Kay wondered.
It meant something, surely. Something that had nothing to do with love and everything to do with the dead queen. That was what this conversation was about, she realized. His queen had treated him like a toy she had grown tired of and traded him, not caring whether his new owner would be careless with him, not even caring that his new owner might break him. Clearly, she had plans that included needing her toy back.
"And what if I told you that you had already proven it to my satisfaction?
Come, tarry a time with us. There is honey wine and crisp red apples. Sit by my side again."
Kay bit her own lip hard. The pain helped her accept that he was not hers, would never be hers. And if it was much too late to pretend that didn't hurt, she could at least shove it down so deeply inside her that he would never know. Reuben stared at Salariel with a mixture of longing and scorn. "You must forgive me," Reuben said. "But the smell of apples makes me want to retch." The queen looked shocked, then angry. Reuben seemed to watch those emotions flit across her face impassively.
"Then you had best make haste," the queen said.
Reuben nodded and bowed. Kay almost forgot to. When they were a few paces away, the white-haired woman caught Reuben's arm, pulling him to face her, laughing.
"Reuben!"
It was the woman who had gasped before. Her hair was to her knees, some of it swept up into heavy braids on her head. She wore the costume of one of the queen's handmaidens.
"I was worried about you,"
she said, again the smile wobbling on her face.
"The things I had heard."
"All true, no doubt," Reuben said, a touch lightly.
He ran his fingers through the girl's hair, and Kay shivered sympathetically, knowing how those long fingers felt.
"Your hair is so long."
"I haven't cut it since you left."
The woman turned to Kay.